You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. On today's show, we'll cover all of the news around baseball, highlight some player performances, and recommend some pitching and hitter streamers for the week ahead. But before we get into that, John, how are you doing? Anything new in your life so far?
Not much. It's been a pretty good fantasy baseball week for me in my home league. I'm currently 12-0-0
in
categories.
Okay.
And it'll probably will end up being 11-1-0 because the guy has me in caper nine. He just doesn't have enough starts yet.
Okay.
But I can't complain with that kind of week. So it's been pretty good.
We call that in our league, it's a 10-team category league, but we call that a perfect week if you 10-0 someone, because each counts, so it's not just a win if you win the week.
Right, yep, same. Yeah.
So we call that a perfect week. So, hey, you're on the verge of a perfect week, my friend. That's a pretty good week.
Yeah, it could be real fun. I mean, it's our league is kind of interesting in that playoffs start in the middle of July.
Oh, so right. This is the league you told me about ages ago, yeah.
Yeah. So this is kind of the league where, you know, it's starting to ramp up to the end of the season, and so you got to be kind of be on your game here because you got to be ready for the playoffs.
That's crazy to think when you say the league is winding down.
I know.
The playoffs are coming soon. We're not even halfway through the season yet.
Right, exactly. I mean, our season does end, you know, like end of August.
Right.
Know, so that's kind of normal. But at the same time, yeah, it's kind of crazy to think that in, yeah, about 4 weeks, games are going to start to matter. And, you know, once you lose, you're out. So, yeah, it's tightening up a little bit.
Yeah, that's wild. We're actually in our league, we have 22 weeks in my home league. And that's regular season and then 2 weeks of playoffs. So we are in week 11 right now. So we're technically at the halfway point of the regular season. So it's funny to think that in a month for you, your season's just beginning for the playoffs.
Right, yeah.
It's a completely different vibe than a standard league.
Right, yeah. On a sad note, I did miss out on Ellie De La Cruz in TGFBI, but I also didn't have enough budget to bid for him anyways. So
how much did he go for?
He went for $502 in my league.
Wow. Oh, yeah. My God. He didn't go for that much in mine. So in my TGFBI league, he went for $393.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
And the runner-up was $311, and I only have like $240 in my budget, and I did not get him, obviously.
Yeah.
And then in my other league in NFBC, he actually went for $451 with a runner-up of $369. So, yeah, I told you last podcast that he was going to fetch over $300, and like I said, I could see people going up to five.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts, you know. Imagine like spending half your fab on, you know, one player, but Ellie's been electric. He's kind of looking every bit the part of the future star that a lot of people were expecting him to be. And the strikeout numbers aren't great, but at the same time, you know, he's a young player and there's still plenty of room for him to grow.
Yeah, a lot of people were worrying about the strikeout rate and whatnot. And yes, he struck out a lot and he doesn't have a hit in his last three games. But the thing I can say is that he's gotten a counting stat in every single game except for the last one that he played on June 14th. He's literally gotten, from June 6th, his debut, one run, a homer, two RBI, two runs, one steal, one run, a run, an RBI, and a steal, two runs, an RBI, and a steal, a run, and a steal, and then nothing. So as long as you're getting counting stats from Ellie, that's all you want.
Right.
Like, if he strikes out a billion times, I don't care. If he ends with a 25 home or 15 steal line, I could care less. I don't care how much he strikes out.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes all you need are the counting stats. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, analytics people love to say an out is an out. Doesn't matter if it's a strikeout or a flyout or something like that. As long as he's, you know, still racking up the counting stats and having pretty decent ratios, got to be pretty happy with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But before we get into this episode, I'd like to remind all of you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. We are on all of them, so make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. And please, if you don't mind, take a few minutes and leave a 5-star review. If you enjoy listening to us, it helps us out a lot. Now, let's get into the MLB news since our last podcast. We start with Yordan Alvarez of the Astros. He will miss 4 weeks due to that oblique discomfort. Astros general manager Dana Brown confirmed that Alvarez underwent an MRI that allowed the club to determine a clearer timetable for his potential return. He should be back after the All-Star break, considering he'll miss 4 weeks, then he has to ramp back up, and then there's going to be the break anyway, so you can expect sometime around the All-Star break, either just before or right after. I'm going to assume right after, and I'm upset about it because I have 2 shares of Alvarez, and that's 2 shares where I'm sad. Aaron Judge of the Yankees is still without a timetable for his return. However, he received a PRP injection last week and is reportedly feeling better. I still don't think this is going to last a long time. I think he'll be back before the All-Star break. We just don't know for sure, so hopefully he's back soon as well. Once again, 2 shares of him, 2 shares of sadness. More sad news, Vinny Pasquantino of the Royals will undergo season-ending surgery to repair a torn labrum in his right shoulder. Pasquantino was a super popular sleeper option at first base in drafts this season, and it's a shame to see him miss the remainder of the season due to injury. Hopefully, you'll be fully healthy and perform well in 2024. Vinny, we will be looking forward to that. Byron Buxton of the Twins was activated from the 10-day IL on Thursday. Buxton hasn't played since June 2nd with a left rib contusion. In a corresponding move to that, Trevor Larnach was sent down to AAA. Max Muncy of the Dodgers was originally said to have a grade 2 hamstring strain. We were told by Dave Roberts that it's a grade 2 hamstring strain, but he wouldn't be going on the IL, and he'd hopefully be back on Saturday, which I originally found weird and like scratched my head at, because a grade 2 hamstring strain usually means an immediate IL stint. John and I were actually just talking about this before we started the podcast, and we were both really confused about this, because when you hear grade 2, you assume the worst. There's only 3 grades. Grade 1 is all right, you can get through it, it's just a little sore. Grade 2 is more of like a pull, and then grade 3 is a tear. So grade 3 obviously being the worst. Grade 2, you're out for a pretty long time. But on Thursday, Muncy was on a show called Foul Territory and said that there was a media goof and confirmed that it's not a grade 2 hamstring strain. It's a low-grade strain. He said, if it was a grade 2, you're looking at a month, 2 months. Thankfully, that's not what I'm looking at right now. So keep an eye on Muncy's status, but it sounds like he's okay and should return this weekend. John, what do you think about this whole mess? How does the media goof this up?
I mean, part of it's got to be Dave Roberts' issue, right?
Like, he must have misread something, right?
Yeah, he straight up just called it a grade 2 hamstring strain. And, like, you know, I think everyone basically went into WebMD and was like, what is a grade 2 hamstring strain? And it was like, this has a 2-month recovery period. And that was nuts. And it was interesting because at first when he got pulled, Robert said, oh, you know, we're going to give it a couple days of rest and he'll be back on Thursday. And then he went to the meeting and said it's grade 2. And everyone's just like, wait, you said Thursday. Now he's like
out
like,
forever.
past the All-Star break. So that was a little scary. But it's good to see that he's at least going to be back by the end of this weekend. No one needs to freak out just yet and find a new second baseman. Thankfully, on my home league where I have Muncy, I had Tyro Estrada kind of pop in, and he's been, you know, okay. But I will be very glad to have Muncy back in that starting second baseman spot on my team.
Yeah, Muncy has been super valuable in fantasy this season. On Yahoo, he has second base and third base eligibility, and he's got 18 homers, 45 RBI, even 1 steal. He's ranked 28 on Yahoo at the moment, so he's performing really well, and it would stink if he missed a prolonged amount of time. But Muncy is a little injury prone, and he isn't the youngest player on the field for sure. So hopefully this is nothing. He comes back on Saturday and everything's cool. So hopefully when you're listening to this on Saturday, Muncy's back in the lineup. Julio Urias of the Dodgers did not return from the IL on Sunday as expected. During a bullpen session, Urias experienced some left hamstring discomfort. God, these Dodgers with their hamstrings. Come on, guys. Manager Dave Roberts said that Urias will require at least 1 minor league rehab start before returning. He threw a bullpen on Wednesday and seems on track for that rehab assignment soon. Jazz Chisholm Jr. of the Marlins told reporters Monday that he'll need to undergo off-season foot surgery. Although he needs off-season surgery, it won't stop him from returning for this season. He's begun taking batting practice and appears to be on the verge of returning to Miami's lineup in the next few weeks after landing on the injured list back in mid-May due to turf toe. John Gray of the Rangers was scratched from his start on Tuesday with a blister. He's lined up to start on Sunday against the Blue Jays. Cody Bellinger of the Cubs was activated from the 10-day IL on Thursday, June 15th. He missed about a month of time due to a severe left knee contusion. While Bellinger was on his rehab assignment, he played at first base, and it's rumored that he'll be playing more first base than outfield moving forward. On Thursday, in his first game back, he batted sixth and started at first base. In a corresponding move to this, Matt Mervis was optioned to AAA. Justin Steele of the Cubs threw a bullpen session on Tuesday. He's targeting a return to Chicago's starting rotation for Saturday's game against the Orioles and appears to be on track. Salvador Perez of the Royals is day-to-day with a left-hand contusion. He was hit on his hand with a Ben Lively fastball and proceeded to leave the game on Wednesday. X-rays came back negative for any fractures, so that's good. Joe Musgrove of the Padres says he's been dealing with bursitis in his elbow. Musgrove said, "I had some elbow issues early in spring, possibly from the hyperbaric chamber. We went to Mexico and it blew up in Mexico, just really swollen. Since then, it has been manageable, but it seems like the elevation and pressurized areas are causing more and more trouble." I'm not sure how confident I am in Musgrove for the rest of the season because this doesn't sound too great. John, any opinions on this? I mean, pretty sketchy.
Man, any time a pitcher says, "I have elbow issues, but I'm going to be fine." Yeah, I just don't believe that.
Yeah, I mean,
there is reality where like some of these things you can manage, right? But at the same time, like, it's still going to affect him pitching wise, and you know, maybe this results in some maybe a little bit lower velocity, or maybe he starts compensating it with, I don't know, more shoulder or something like that. Like, it's just really never good for any pitcher to be dealing with any arm injuries and then pitch kind of through it. So
yeah.
I'm kind of with you in not feeling too confident about Musgrove. I definitely would not be chasing him right now in any leagues if I was looking to trade for a pitcher.
Yeah, I'm definitely worried. If in your league someone's not really up to date and thinks this is no problem and isn't worried by it, I would try to flip Musgrove for a pitcher around the same caliber. I really don't know what that would entail. Maybe you can get like a Bryce Miller or a Bobby Miller, someone that you could take an upside chance on. Maybe you can flip him for like Jesus Luzardo, although he hasn't been too great. But I don't know. I'm kind of scared about this Musgrove stuff because especially if he's worrying about elevation and pressurized areas, he can't go to Colorado. Arizona might give him some issues. Like, I don't know. Just doesn't seem too good. So keep an eye on Joe Musgrove because he is kind of sketchy right now. Lars Nootbaar of the Cardinals is set to begin a rehab assignment with AAA Memphis. He should return early next week if everything goes well and the back issues don't reappear. He's been on the IL since May 30th. Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals was placed on the 15-day IL, retroactive to June 10th, with a right forearm strain. Original tests on Helsley's injured right forearm came back negative, and after a second round of imaging, it said that the concern is minimal. Giovanni Gallegos will most likely see the majority of saves for now, but hopefully Helsley will be okay. Zach Neto of the Angels was placed on the 10-day IL with a left oblique strain. Brandon Drury of the Angels was suspended for one game after making contact with an umpire in Monday's game. He served his suspension on Thursday. Nick Lodolo of the Reds is unlikely to return until early August. Reds manager David Bell told reporters that he could return in 4 to 6 weeks. Lodolo has been on the shelf since early May due to left calf tendinosis. Jake Fraley of the Reds was placed on the 10-day IL retroactive to June 8th with a right wrist contusion. He's expected to return when first eligible. Mike Clevinger of the White Sox was removed from Wednesday's start against the Dodgers due to right bicep soreness. Liam Hendricks of the White Sox was placed on the 15-day IL due to right elbow inflammation. He's received a PRP injection and a cortisone shot since being placed on the IL. But come on, baseball gods, like, let this man just be healthy after everything that he's been through. Don't give him elbow problems as well. We don't need that. Drew Smith of the Mets has received a 10-game suspension following his ejection from Tuesday's contest against the Yankees for the use of an illegal foreign substance. All I'll say is sweat and rosin. And no, I'm not just playing favorites for the Mets. If a Mets player was cheating, I would come right out and say it, but it was just sweat and rosin. He didn't even throw a pitch in that outing, so very strange. Pete Fairbanks of the Rays was activated from the 15-day IL on Thursday. Fairbanks missed 18 days with hip inflammation. Lance McCullers Jr. of the Astros underwent season-ending surgery Tuesday on his right forearm to repair a flexor tendon and remove a bone spur. McCullers never pitched in 2023 because of what the Astros said for weeks was a low-grade muscle strain in his forearm. Unfortunate news for a guy who just can't find a way to stay healthy. J.D. Davis of the Giants has been diagnosed with a grade 1 right ankle sprain. Even though it's the least severe of sprains, he'll most likely have to be put on the IL. As of Thursday night when we're recording this, he hasn't been put on the IL yet, so just keep an eye out on his status, and if he moves to the IL, move him into that spot. Mitch Haniger of the Giants was placed on the 10-day IL with a right forearm fracture. He underwent surgery on Thursday to repair that right forearm. There's no timetable for his return, but an injury like this usually warrants a 3 to 6 month recovery process. In a corresponding move, the Giants called up Luis Matos from AAA on Wednesday, June 14th. Matos was the fourth best prospect in their organization, according to MLB Pipeline. He has a contact-forward approach with decent pop and good speed. In any 12-team league or deeper, or five outfield leagues, Matos should be picked up from the wire. Give the guy a chance. If he pans out, great. If not, cut bait. And last but not least, the Orioles called up Joey Ortiz from AAA Norfolk on Wednesday, June 14th. Ortiz was the sixth best prospect in their organization, according to MLB Pipeline. In the minors, he was batting .328 with 18 extra base hits in 32 games. Throw him on the watch list and see if he gets everyday playing time before you run to pick him up, but he does have some promise. John, any notes on this list before we move on?
Probably the main strange thing here is probably the whole Jazz Chisholm situation, where it's like, I know I need surgery, but I'm still going to come out and play. I mean, he's been decent in his transition to center field. He hasn't been as electric, mainly because injuries have kind of sapped a lot of that production. But man, he just can't stay healthy, which kind of sucks for a guy who is as electric as Chisholm. You know, when we did our spring training preview pods, I was very interested in seeing how Lance McCullers was going to do, because when everything is firing for him, he's a really solid guy. But the worry with him is always injury. And, you know, lo and behold, he is basically not on track to play at all this season. And hopefully he can get back next season fully healthy. But knowing his track record, that's probably going to be unlikely.
Yeah, McCullers is always a headache for me. I want to buy in so bad because the stuff is nasty. And when he's healthy and on the mound, he's great. He's so good. He has so much potential. But I'm just so out on him because I haven't seen him pitch more than like three starts in a row in the last many years. So
yeah.
I can't trust it. It's kind of like what Tyler Glasnow is going through, where he's so dominant when he's healthy and on the mound, but we just haven't seen enough of it. So hopefully he's not on the same track as McCullers. But yeah, no, it's not looking good for Lance McCullers. And then, as you pointed out with Jazz Chisholm, the only thing I can say, obviously it's definitely worrisome that he needs offseason surgery, but it's going to be playing through it. Harper last season also needed surgery technically, but played like the whole season while having that issue. So there is some cases where players know they need surgery and maybe aren't playing 100%, but they can squeeze it out at 90%. So I'm not too worried about Chisholm playing this season, but he might not be his normal self. He probably won't run very much. That's the one thing I can say, is he probably won't steal a lot of bases if he's dealing with a toe injury. So that's the one downside to that. But hopefully he's okay, because why would you push yourself if you know you need surgery and it's bad, you know?
Well, and he's also at a more mobile position,
right,
in center field as opposed to being at second base.
Yeah, that's definitely a little bit of an issue for Jazz Chisholm. And hopefully he's okay, because the MLB The Show 23 cover athlete needs to be healthy and on the field. But before we get into the weekly performance recap for this week, we will take a quick break, so stay tuned. All right, we are back, and it's time for the weekly performance recap. Just a reminder, we get most of our hitter and pitcher highlights from the daily articles on the Pitcher List website. The hitter recap and SP roundup articles are incredible resources to read through to see how players performed each day. But John, how did the weekend go? Who stood out to you the most?
Yeah, we'll start on Friday with Jordan Walker of the St. Louis Cardinals, 3-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBI. Since he's returned from AAA, the Cardinals rookie outfielder has hit .326 with 2 homers, including 1 last Friday that flew off his bat at 109 miles an hour and traveled 430 feet. He's also added 6 RBI in that time as well. He also has improved discipline. He's been striking out less and walking more, you know, small sample size and everything, but that's improvement nonetheless. The Cards might be in all sorts of dysfunction right now, but Walker has been a bright spot in the month of June. If he's available in your league and you need some outfield help, it would not be a bad idea to pick him up during this hot streak. On Saturday, Corey Seager of the Texas Rangers went 5-for-5 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. Seager's been making up for lost time after dealing with an early season injury. In 163 play appearances this season, he's got 27 runs, 9 homers, 36 RBI, and he's also batting .357. We talked about him a couple weeks ago, and we cautioned that, you know, yes, he does have these really high ratios, but maybe that's just a result of smaller sample size. But at this point, through that many plate appearances, it's kind of hard to ignore that he's top 3 in average, OBP, and slugging throughout the league. And he's also outperforming the entire league in both expected average and expected WOBA, at least when PitcherList calculates, when we do our own calculations for X average and X WOBA. So basically, he's doing everything that he should be, and this is clearly not a fluke. This is the real deal. So he's pretty much contributing also in every single category for you, except for steals, with this performance on Saturday. So, you know, Corey Seager just doing crazy things. If he didn't miss that many games, he'd probably be in the surefire running for MVP with the way his season's going. But we'll see if he'll be able to make up for lost time in the next few months. And then finally on Sunday, Jock Peterson of the Giants went 4-for-4 with 2 homers, 4 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. Jock had been out for nearly a month on the injury list before coming back last Tuesday. And to keep the trend going for players who are hot in June, he's been really good. He has a .423 average, along with the 2 homers from Sunday's game, and then 6 RBI total. His advanced metrics seem to indicate that a really good year is coming, making good hard contact. He's not striking out a lot. The X average and X WOBA are looking good for him. So if you have a spot on your roster for an outfielder who can likely help in most categories, obviously he's not going to steal a lot, I would check out Jock Peterson.
For anyone who hung on to Jordan Walker after he got sent down, you're finally getting paid off. It's awesome to see that he's succeeding now, because you don't want to see a guy who had so much hype and potential going into the season just struggle and get off to such a poor start. So it's great to see that he's getting playing time. It's great to see that he's succeeding. So shout out to you, Jordan Walker. Hopefully you can keep it up for the rest of the year. Corey Seager, absolute stud. Absolute stud. So happy to have a few shares of him. I just want him to stay healthy and just keep going, because he's been so good. And then Jock Peterson, he's been on and off. He's such a hot and cold hitter, but when he's on a hot streak like this, you just got to ride him out, especially even in 3 outfield leagues. Just grab him while he's on this hot streak, and then the second you see like 2 back-to-back 0-for-4 games, just cut bait, because you know he's going to go on that cold streak. So lots of up and down with Jock Peterson, but when he's hot, he is hot.
Yeah, moving on to pitchers then, a player who's been hot and cold this season, Dylan Cease, the White Sox. He got a no decision against Miami on Friday. Pitched for 6 innings with 1 run, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. This, of course, was a hot start for him because he had the slider, even though it wasn't working, the fastball and curveball were. After a Cy Young caliber season last year, he's kind of followed up this entire season with a dud. Through 14 starts, his ERA has almost doubled from last year's mark. And while he's not walking guys more, which was always kind of the thing with Cease, where his command was all over the place, he's giving up a lot more hard contact, 30.2% compared to last year's mark of 18.3%. So the good thing about this start, like I mentioned, slider wasn't that great, and that's been his best pitch, arguably one of the better pitches in baseball. But the fastball and curve were getting strikes, and we're making up for the lack of production from that slider. If his fastball and curve can be more consistent this year, he'll be able to make up for the fact that his slider isn't generating as many whiffs as it did last year. And perhaps that means he can ultimately turn it around and become an ace again. But I wouldn't hold my breath. On Saturday, then, Kyle Hendricks of the Cubs was against the Giants, got a win. He went 8 innings with 0 earned runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. Wow, Kyle Hendricks is actually alive. I was not aware that he could possibly pull out these types of results. It was actually kind of impressive, as he recorded 5 total hits, walks, and strikeouts, which basically counts as a really good real-life performance, but kind of a meh fantasy performance. I mean, 8 innings with 3 strikeouts, you don't love it, but you do love the 1 hit and 1 walk and 0 earned runs. Is he a viable fantasy pickup for the rest of the season? Probably not. He does have a decent matchup coming up against Pittsburgh, so if you can stomach the lack of strikeouts, then maybe go for it. I just wouldn't expect 8 shutout innings. And then on Sunday, Blake Snell of the Padres went up against Colorado in Colorado, came away with a no decision, pitched for 7 innings with 1 earned run, 3 hits, no walks, and 12 strikeouts. Before you get super excited about Snell's performance, as evidence that he's back to ace status, in this start, he did have some pretty poor command as the four-seamer only found the zone 45% of the time. And the Rockies helped his curveball look great with 9 whiffs, even though it only had a 22% zone rate. Basically, this type of start felt like luck more than an actual demonstration of skill. And I would check out Nick's player breakdown on YouTube if you want to see more from this start.
Yeah, so Dylan Cease, you know, I was off of him going into the season just because he's so wild. And you can never know if his walks will be in check or not. And I rostered him the season before last season. And it was just maddening because it always seemed like that first inning he got into so much trouble and gave up so many runs. I don't know. Dylan Cease just kind of turns my stomach a little bit. But he has been okay this season. Not fantastic. He's still getting strikeouts and whatnot, of course. But yeah, it's a big disappointment. I actually saw something the other week. Now, these numbers have probably updated. I know Cease's ERA is a little bit lower. Verlander's ERA is a little bit lower. But there was a tweet. It was MLB ERA leaders last year and what their ERA is this year. And this comes from at Yankee World on Twitter. And basically, the ERA leaders last year were Verlander, Urias, Cease, Manoa, and Alcantara in that order. Verlander had a 1.75, Urias 2.16, Cease 2.20, Manoa 2.24, and Alcantara 2.28. Well, their ERAs this season, Verlander 4.85. Once again, that's updated since this tweet. Urias 4.39, Cease 4.63, once again updated since his tweet, Manoa 6.36, and he's now in the rookie complex league, and Alcantara 5.07. So yeah, doesn't look too good for the ERA leaders last season and how they're performing this year. Now, I think they'll all turn it around. They're all great pitchers, but you never know, man. It's pretty wild that pitching can just flip on its head at some points. For Kyle Hendricks, it's cool that he's back. It's awesome to see that he's doing something. Like you said, hey, look, he's alive. But yeah, I wouldn't recommend him for any fantasy purposes. Maybe if he goes on a good run, you can trust him against lower offenses in a streaming scenario, like what John recommended against the Pirates coming up. So I don't know. I still would be weary of Kyle Hendricks, but it's great to see him back. And then Blake Snell has been on such a good streak. His last 4 outings have been really good. Now, he did get fortunate with this one because he was kind of wild and ineffective, and the Rockies really made him look way better than what he deserved to have as a final line. But man, at Washington on May 25th, 5 innings, 6 strikeouts, 1.80 ERA. May 31st against the Marlins, 6 innings pitched, 7 Ks, no earned runs. June 5th against the Cubs, 6 innings pitched, 8 Ks, no earned runs. And then at Colorado, which if you started him, you've got some massive cojones because I didn't plan on it, but he has been good. But he went 7 innings, 12 Ks, and a 1.29 ERA. Just good stuff out of Snell, who's been really bad this season. So it's nice to see a little hot streak out of him, because when he's on, he's on, and he's usually a second-half pitcher. Like we saw last season, he was horrible the whole year. And then in the second half, he went on some miracle stretch that just dominated. So it's good to see that Snell is kind of back on the right track, but you never know with him. He could turn into a pumpkin in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, the thing with Snell is ultimately, like, he's a really solid, let's just say, like a top 30 pitcher, right? But I think everyone's hoping Snell can become like a top 15 guy.
Yes.
And like, he reels you in with these starts, right? It's like, oh wow, like, you know, one earned run, no runs. He's getting like a lot of strikeouts. It's like, oh, this is really, really good. And then he follows it up with like 3 straight starts where he gives up like 5 earned runs, and you're just like, come on, where was this Snell the whole time? So yeah, it's a little unfortunate, but he's kind of one of those guys where if you pick him up at the right time, it works out really well. And then maybe you can sell high and get some good return for him.
Yeah, he's a great guy to pick up during a great schedule and ride him out, see if he does well. And if he does well, flip him for whatever you can get, because sure, he could keep it up, but the chances are that he kind of has some up and down starts that you don't really feel comfortable with.
Right. Yep.
Moving on to Monday, June 12th. From the Daily Hitting Recap article by Gabe Gorelnick, we start with JT Realmuto of the Phillies. He went 4-for-4 with 3 runs, a homer, 3 RBI, and a walk. Those 4 hits that he had were a single, a double, a triple, and a homer to give Realmuto the cycle in Arizona. Up until this week, Realmuto has kind of felt underwhelming for fantasy production. He currently has a 260, 310, 484 slash line with 7 homers and 10 stolen bases, which is more than good from the catcher position. Realmuto also leads catchers in doubles this season, which is very good. Before this game, though, he was 0 for 13 in his last 4 games. However, this week, he's caught fire, going 7 for 12 with 7 runs, 2 homers, 6 RBI, and a stolen base. The Phillies seem to be finding their groove recently, and offense is contagious. Realmuto should continue to be a top 3 catcher for fantasy this season, and he's still one of the only real options that will provide stolen bases from the position. Obviously, Dalton Varsho gives steals as well, but after this season, he probably won't have catcher eligibility, so Realmuto is still a rock for steals from the catcher spot, but Realmuto, just a solid guy that's finally coming around and clicking and giving you the stats that you want for this season. Next, we have Leody Taveras of the Rangers, who went 3-for-5 with a double, a walk, and a steal. Fun fact, Leody Taveras is having an incredible season. If you didn't know, now you know. You're welcome. Analysis over. We're done here. No, but really, his current slash line is 305, 364, 481, and this is out of the 9 hole for the Rangers. He has 32 runs, 28 RBI, 6 home runs, and 7 stolen bases. Also, none of this is a fluke, because his StatCast page is red everywhere. With the exception of barrel percentage, everything else is just bleeding red. Some highlights from that StatCast page are that his XBA is in the 94th percentile, sprint speed is in the 95th percentile, and average exit velocity is in the 69th percentile. If you need consistent production from a hitter in one of the best lineups in baseball right now, I'd consider picking up Taveras. Maybe some deep 3 outfield leagues, but mainly in your 5 outfield leagues is where he should be rostered. But yeah, he's been fantastic. I really didn't know he was doing that well, and he's been great. And lastly, shout out to Shohei Ohtani, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. After this couple of home runs and a homer on both Wednesday and Thursday, Ohtani is tied with Pete Alonso for the most homers in baseball. He has an over 300 batting average, 22 homers, and 10 steals. Oh, and by the way, he also has a 3.38 ERA and a bunch of strikeouts. So yeah, he's pretty unbelievable.
Just give him the MVP already, right?
Yeah, just give him the hardware.
Yeah. So fun fact about that JT Realmuto's performance was that was the first time a Philly has hit for the cycle since June 28th, 2004.
Wow.
Yeah, thanks to Little Piranha on the Pitcherless Discord for that little trivia piece. Yeah, so like you mentioned, though, you know, 7 home runs, 10 stolen bases. Like, I was actually kind of looking at catchers, because I'll be talking about Adley Rutschman a little bit later. I was like, okay, who's doing well in the catcher spot? And then I sorted by stolen bases, and it's like JT Realmuto 10, and then like the next guy had like 1. And so yeah, Realmuto for sure. Like you mentioned, it's been a little underwhelming for a guy who, you know, is expected to be the number one catcher. But just if you look a little bit deeper than, you know, kind of your basic slash line, like, he's been doing really, really well. And Phillies have been really good in June. So as that team continues to heat up and kind of gel, you know, they kind of went through a little bit of a lull in April and May, but with Harper back now and kind of, you know, looking a little bit more like his normal self, and Schwarber's again on a little bit of a hot streak here, which is nice. Casty, you know, is kind of rediscovering his stroke. Like, yeah, that team, I think it's very much a situation where if everyone is doing well, hey, Trey Turner is actually doing stuff now, surprisingly.
Yep.
That team will look really, really good, you know, come mid-July, come August, and they'll look like another threat in the NL East and in that NL pennant race.
Yeah, that lineup is extremely scary when they're on. I mean, if you just look at the 1-5, right, even 1-7 now that Stott and Bohm are doing pretty well, but you have Schwarber, you have Trey Turner, Realmuto, you have Harper, you have Castellanos, you have Stott, you have Bohm. That lineup is deep and scary. Yeah. So if they click like they seem to be doing right now, they can put up some numbers, and it really is contagious. Like I said, offense comes in bunches, and when they're on, it's going to be a nightmare for opposing pitchers. Speaking of opposing pitchers, we move on to the pitchers from Monday from the SP Roundup article, See Bold and the Beautiful from Nick Pollock. We start with James Paxton of the Red Sox, who went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts against the Rockies. See, we tried telling you all to pick him up to stream him for this matchup specifically. Great job, John. I even took it a step further and told you all just to roster Paxton if he's out there. If you stream him for the start, hold on to him. If he's healthy and doing this, he's going to be great for you in fantasy. Paxton's curveball had a 45% CSW in this start, and his cutter went 18 for 21 on strikes. The Big Maple is back, and he looks dominant. Once again, if he's out there on your wire, pick him up and enjoy the ride for however long it lasts. Then we have Bryce Miller of the Mariners, who went 6 innings, pitched 1 earned run, 1 hit, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts against the Marlins. This was a much-needed bounce-back start for Miller, who gave up 15 earned runs in 7 innings pitched combined across his last 2 starts. Just a brutal line in the last 2 days for him, so it's great to see him come back to form. He was able to quiet the fish with his elite 4-seam fastball. There's still worries about his secondaries overall, like his slider that currently has a 50% strike rate, but his fastball is so good that it almost doesn't matter. Keep riding Bryce Miller and just hope that his secondary start to improve as the season progresses.
Yeah, I was actually kind of disappointed because I was looking for James Paxton in my home league and he was already picked up.
So,
I was a little sad I wasn't able to take advantage of this one, but yeah, great start from him. And yeah, he's looking more and more consistent, and it is kind of a guy that you want to hold on to if you can. Yes, he was against Rocky Road, you know. There's a lot of reasons why you could say that this was, luck. But at the end of the day, I think he looks like his normal self back, you know, before all the injuries, really. Like, he's had seasons basically taken away from him because of injury. But right now, yeah, he's looking really solid. Like, that curveball you mentioned, just doing damage. And Bryce Miller, yeah, like, he had, you know, those two really, really poor starts. It was against really good teams, so you can't really knock him for that. But yeah, I'll talk about it a little bit later, but George Kirby, who's his teammate, has been able to develop really, really solid secondaries, even though for a long time he was kind of known for his fastball. But maybe there's something that Bryce Miller can learn from there. His slider is already, you know, pretty solid, but it just needs to be a little bit better so that it can support that fastball.
Yeah, with Paxton, he's only had one bad outing this season. It was against the Angels on May 24th. Where he went 3 innings and had a 15 ERA. So he had a really poor start there, but every other start has been dominant. In every start, he's had 8 or more strikeouts except for one, besides that one blow up. So really awesome. I mean, a 3.09 ERA, a 1.16 whip, and 44 strikeouts in 32 innings pitched. James Paxton is back in full effect, guys. If he's on your wire, pick him up, because clearly someone in John's league listens to our podcast and already grabbed him. Someone in my league listened to our podcast and apparently already grabbed him too. When I tried to get him 2 weeks ago, he was already rostered. So upsetting with that. But yeah, Paxton's been great and Miller is on his way back.
Yeah. Moving on to Tuesday then, thanks to Mark Stubinger for the daily hitting recap article. We're starting with Kyle Farmer of my Twins, who went 2-for-3 with a double home run, runs, and a RBI. The big story of the night might be the other shorts from the Twins, Carlos Correa, who did hit a walk-off two-run shot. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But Farmer was a big part of the Twins' win over the Brewers on Tuesday as well. Both his hits came off former NL Central rival Corbin Burnes, including a homer off a middle-middle cutter. Farmer did miss some time early this season. If you recall, he got hit in the face by a Lucas Giolito fastball. But in the last 2 months, yeah, he's been all right, right? He's put up 3 homers, hit 10 RBIs, but had a .286 average, .343 OBP, .407 slugging. Not numbers that you should necessarily go out and chase, but in deep leagues and AL-only leagues, he definitely still has some value as a middle or corner infielder, as the Twins have been pretty much trying to get his bat in the lineup most days. Yes, sometimes that's as a pinch hitter, but he's been pretty invaluable to the Twins as a super utility man. And, one injury here and there, and he could be back to being in the starting spot for a little bit. So Kyle Farmer, definitely a guy to keep your eye on if you are in one of those very deep leagues. Opposite of him was Christian Yelich of the Brewers, went 3-for-5 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. The former MVP put together a couple extra base hits this game, and he's actually having one of the better seasons in recent memory. He's already equaled his home run total from 2021 and his steals total from 2022. The walk rate has dropped a little bit, but so has the strikeout rate. He's definitely outperforming his ADP now, and it looks like Yelich is on his way for a really, really solid season. It's not necessarily an MVP candidate sort of season, but It is one that you could probably be very happy that you roster him. And a couple shout outs here. Again, Carlos Correa has a 973 OPS and 7 extra base hits in the month of June. He's looking every bit like the MVP candidate Twins fans were hoping for. And also had to mention Gunnar Henderson of the Orioles. Went 3-for-5 with 1 run, 1 homer, 4 RBI. He's now hitting 520, 538, and 1,040 in his last 7 games with 4 bombs and 2 steals. And for those of you who don't love small sample sizes on the season, he is also slashing 241, 347, 461, which aren't terrible numbers. You know, that's around an 800 OPS. That's still pretty solid for a guy who, you know, technically is in his sophomore season. For the most part, is bouncing back in a big way.
So I don't have much to say really about Kyle Farmer. I think he's a great option for a middle or corner infield spot, like you mentioned, in AL-only leagues or 15-team leagues, something like TGFBI. Like, he gets the job done, but he really doesn't move the needle anywhere in counting stats. He'll get you some RBI and runs, but homers, he's not going to hit you too many. Steals, he's not going to get you very many. But he's got a good average, a good OBP, so Kyle Farmer is just a deeper league option. Christian Yelich has been incredible. Like, something unexpected. We expected him to be hurt by now or just kind of struggling a little bit because he hasn't looked too great in the past few years. And he's got 16 stolen bases right now and 9 home runs. He's really taking advantage of the pitch clock and the bigger bases. He is stealing like crazy right now. And on Yahoo, he's a top 10 outfielder. So Yelich is really performing over his head. And I think he can keep it up because it's not like he's doing anything crazy. It's not like he's on a 40 home run pace, 40 stolen base pace, but he could definitely hit somewhere around 20 home runs and steal 30 to 35 bases if he stays healthy all season, and that's incredible. That's some great value that you got in your drafts. And then, yeah, Carlos Correa has been much better as of late, and Gunnar Henderson, before this crazy last 7 games, he was batting 200 for the season, and he raised his average from 200 to 241. So if he keeps this trend up and he starts continuing to perform at this level, he is going to be every bit as advertised in the beginning of the year because he was an obvious favorite for Rookie of the Year. And then after that start, he just looked abysmal. And he looks much more like that Rookie of the Year candidate that we all thought he was going to be. So for anyone that held on to Gunnar Henderson this season, kudos to you because he was borderline droppable and barely helping you at all. But you stayed strong and resilient, and now he's helping you and paying off dividends. So congrats to Gunnar Henderson. Way to go.
Yeah, actually, one funny thing about Yelich was his hard contact has increased, but his ground ball rate, like, is kind of around the same. And that was always the issue with Yelich, right? Was that right. He's smashing all these ground balls like directly into the ground. So he actually hasn't necessarily improved in that at all. But when he's hitting the ball hard, at least sometimes now it's resulting in line drives and fly balls. So that's kind of helping those homer numbers look a little bit better and helping him get on base and get those steals. So yeah. Yelich for sure, one of those guys who is, like I mentioned, just completely outperforming his ADP, and gotta be pretty happy if he's on your roster.
Oh, absolutely.
Moving on to then the SP Roundup article from Nick Pollock, the never-ending story. We're going to start with Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers, who came away with a win against the White Sox. 6 innings, 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. The 2022 All-Star is defying logic again, as he's currently 4th in the league in ERA and 6th in WHIP. Now, of course, the numbers are a little skewed because he's only had 9 starts. Already, he's had a few games in the past month where he's given up more runs than you'd like, but this was a start where everything worked out. Gonsolin's struggles are a lack of strikeout ability, and his poor command usually leads to a lot of walks. That usually isn't a recipe of success, so if someone is looking to trade for Gonsolin, I'd take advantage right now and sell medium high if someone is looking to do that. Then George Kirby of the Mariners got the win against the Marlins. He went 6 innings with zero earned runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. Kirby dominated the Marlins with all 4 of his pitches, the 4-seamer, the sinker, the slider, and the curveball, all just generating strikes and making the batters look silly. The Kirby we wanted with the elite secondaries is finally here, and it seems unfair that Seattle can have this many good pitchers on their team, starters and relievers alike. And then finally, a shout-out to my boy Pablo Lopez, who, despite having a bit of a rough inning in the third, courtesy of Christian Yelich, also managed 9 strikeouts and had a 36% CSW. You love to see it.
Yeah, Gonsolin has been looking pretty good this season, and we really didn't have too big of expectations for Gonsolin. Like, obviously, he's a good pitcher, but we weren't expecting him to put up as good of numbers as he has been this season. I mean, he's got a sub 2 ERA. That's pretty fantastic. A 1.93 ERA, 0.94 whip, 36 strikeouts and 46.2 innings pitched is not really what you want to see. Obviously, you would like more strikeouts, but he's never been a big strikeout guy. But man, this is way more than what you expected out of Tony Gonsolin. But he's kind of just keeping up what he did last season, right? He pitched 130 innings last season to a 2.14 ERA and a 0.87 whip. So I'm really not too surprised from Gonsolin, and I'm kind of surprised that he got so disrespected in drafts this season. I feel like he wasn't even being talked about. So kudos to anybody who drafted him, because he's been on a roll. George Kirby also has been on a roll, barely walks anybody these days. It's incredible. Kirby and the Mariners staff looks great. I mean, Luis Castillo looks great. Logan Gilbert shows flashes of excellence. We had Bryce Miller. I mean, that whole staff is deep. And if Robbie Ray was healthy, they would be dangerous. So yeah, big shout out to the Seattle staff. George Kirby is awesome. Fun fact, my best friend is moving to Washington, and for his going away gift, I got him an autographed George Kirby jersey. And it's cool because George Kirby's on his fantasy team in our home league. Kirby was from New York and moved to Washington, obviously, for Seattle. And that's what my best friend's doing, is going from New York to Seattle. So it kind of made sense on all fronts. And it was a cool little gift there. So thought I'd shout that out. And Pablo Lopez was doing really rough, but it's good to see that he bounced back in a big way. Now, before we get into the performances from Wednesday and Thursday, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back after this. And we are back. Moving on to Wednesday, June 14th, from the Daily Hitting Recap article from Jim Chatterton, we've got Michael Harris, the second of the Braves. He went 4-for-8 with 3 runs, 1 home run, 4 RBI, and 1 stolen base. Now, this was a doubleheader, before you say, whoa, 4-for-8, what's going on here? The 4 hits and all of those stats actually came in the first game of the doubleheader, where he went 4-for-4. The next game, he went 0-for-4, which obviously isn't great, but regardless, Harris has turned things around in June. So far in the month, he has a 157 WRC plus with 3 home runs and 2 stolen bases. Obviously, the sophomore slump is a real thing, but I think Harris's struggles really had to do with that lower back injury that he went through in April. All of his underlying numbers look great, and his Statcast numbers are actually better than last season. On a recent episode of a podcast with Mookie Betts, Harris said that he really feels like himself again and that he's back in his groove. He feels like he started to find his swing again and is finally healthy. So I think Harris is truly coming around and is going to have a strong rest of the season. His projections for the remainder of the season are phenomenal too. The buy low window is probably closed, but I'd try to get him for a discount anywhere that you can. John, little question here. What do you think his rest of the season numbers are?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know what? I don't think it's impossible that he, let's just say, hits 10 more homers and steals 20 more bases. Actually, 20 bases even seems a little conservative. Like, maybe it's like 25 or 30. If he's truly kind of like back to being fully healthy, I could see that being, you know, his speed has always been his calling card. So the power is just kind of an added bonus. So let's go 10 homers, 25 stolen bases.
So I'm going to use rest of season ATC projections. Those are the ones I mainly look at. Shout out to Ariel Cohen, who does the ATC projections. They are fantastic. It's a composite of all of the other projections. So rest of season ATC has him at 317 at-bats, 48 runs, 11 home runs, 43 RBI, 15 stolen bases, and a .261 average with a .313 OBP, .438 slugging, and .751 OPS. And if you get that for the rest of the season, that's phenomenal. And I think he can even outperform that if he gets on a hot stretch, which he currently is. So like you said, I think, you know, 10 homers, 20 steals is very possible for the rest of the season, especially with someone with his tools. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Harris. I was able to scoop him up in a league that he was dropped in, and I'm very happy about it. I mean, he's really come a long way from where he started this season. And like I said, I just think he's healthy now. And that's the key for Michael Harris to continue to succeed, is staying healthy and really finding his groove. Because like I said, the underlying numbers look really good and the rest of season projections back that. So very much looking forward to seeing what he does for the rest of the season. Moving on to Jose Abreu of the Astros. He went 3-for-4 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. Abreu has been horrible this season and the underlying metrics look even worse. However, he seems to be heating up as of late. Abreu usually does better the warmer the weather, But warm weather doesn't change a 23rd percentile barrel percentage and 30th percentile average exit velocity. He hit his first home run of the season on May 28th, and in his last five games, he's hit three home runs, scored four runs, and drove in 10. Abreu's hard hit percentage is 45% in the last month, so maybe he's starting to come around from a really slow start. If a frustrated manager dropped him in your league, and maybe you lost Vinny Pasquantino due to that injury, it might be worth taking a flyer on Abreu if he's out there, but I'm not fully sold. The metrics still look pretty bad, but it's good to see that he's heating up and he's in a great lineup, so it might be worth taking the chance on him. And then I just wanted to highlight Ronald Acuña Jr. and Fernando Tatis Jr., who both had ridiculous days. Over a doubleheader against the Tigers, Acuña went 4-for-8 with two home runs, two runs, four RBI, a stolen base, and two walks. He had a homer in each game and just continues to set baseball ablaze. The clear best fantasy baseball option out there right now with 15 home runs and 29 stolen bases. Like, come on, man, it's a video game to him. And then right on his tail, Fernando Tatis Jr. went 3-for-4 with two doubles, a homer, two runs, an RBI, a walk, and two stolen bases. Since returning from suspension, Tatis has looked like his usual self, and it's great to see 14 homers, 10 stolen bases in 217 plate appearances for Tatis so far. Just two guys that are absolute studs and will be studs for a long, long time.
Yeah, at this point, I think we can give Acuña the National League MVP. I know the Corbin Carroll
people want
that, but Acuña has been, just clearly the favorite for that award. So, obviously good pick for those guys who took him first in your drafts. But Jose Abreu is kind of the name of the game here. I think for him, it's kind of funny because last I checked, it's kind of warmer in Houston anyway. So the whole heating up he gets better as the weather gets warmer. Well, he's been playing in Houston, half his games this season anyway. So it's not like he's been playing in cold weather like he was in Chicago. He's just been really bad. But maybe the metrics are showing that he's maybe coming around a little bit. And like you said, Vinny P, a lot of people had him. It kind of probably drafted him in similar ranges as Jose Abreu.
Definitely.
I think Vinny P was like very clearly like maybe like a top five first baseman. Then there was a little bit of drop off, and then it was kind of Abreu at like maybe like 7 or 8, I think. They're in kind of the same range. So, if you were initially baking on that that projection at the beginning of the season, probably it's not a bad idea to transition to Abreu and see if he can do something for you. Obviously, there's other guys on the waivers, like probably maybe Christian Walker, maybe CJ Cron, if you're, those are more shadow league pickups, but those guys might be available and make more sense to pivot to instead of Abreu. But you never know. He could go on a little bit of a hot streak. It's good to see at least that he's getting a little bit better in June. But to say that this is consistent yet, I would highly doubt that.
In the preseason, in my first base rankings, I actually had Abreu and Pasquantino back-to-back. So great call on that. I think it was 7-8 or 6-7. So yeah, definitely a good shout-out on that. And hey, if he's out there, like I said, you can replace Pasquantino with Abreu if he's available on your wire. But guys that are a little bit more hot, like a Josh Naylor might be out there. Christian Walker, like you mentioned, he should be rostered already, but if he's not, definitely grab him. So yeah, if you're looking for Pasquantino replacements, Abreu might be a good answer, but still not buying it so much. And yeah, Acuña, I mean, we're not even done with June yet, and he's one stolen base away from 30. This is just getting out of hand. It's pretty ridiculous. Give him the hardware. But moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, we have the SP Roundup article, Game Ranger, from Nick Pollock. There were so many good pitching performances on Wednesday. Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander had a classic pitcher's duel at Citi Field. Framber Valdez keeps dealing. Clayton Kershaw still going strong. Jose Barrios took a no-hitter into the seventh inning against the Orioles. Michael Wacha is somehow still dealing. But I wanted to talk about two guys that are probably available on your wire that I think you should pick up if you can. First of all, we have Ranger Suarez of the Phillies. He went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Diamondbacks. That's 4 straight quality starts for Suarez now, so that'll do. Nick pins him as a Vargas Rule sort of guy, which is probably right, but I think that he's got the potential to be at least a Toby and someone that you roster in your league and can rely on, especially in a quality start league. The 4-seamer only went 3-for-14 on strikes, and his changeup didn't look fantastic either in this one. If his command can fully come back, He seems like someone that can really help your fantasy teams out. He's got the Braves and the Mets next in a two-start week, so I don't feel too good about that, but he looks like the version of himself that was awesome in 2021. Suarez was able to do well against the Mets not too long ago, as well as the Dodgers, so you never know. He's worthy of rostering and seeing if it pans out. I think he can break that Vargas rule and just be a Toby, so keep an eye on Suarez if you can grab him. I would recommend it. Maybe not for this two-start week, maybe you bench him for it, but he seems kind of reliable right now. And then the guy I like the most from these two, Garrett Whitlock, who went 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts against the Rockies. That's a King Cole for Whitlock with a ridiculous 39% CSW on the day. His secondaries had a 28% swinging strike rate, and his sinker was thrown for 11 called strikes. His upcoming schedule is beautiful, and his last two performances were stellar against the Yankees and the Rockies. This seems like the beginning of what we were anticipating for Whitlock at the start of the season. The same thing that I said about Braxton Garrett and James Paxton, I'm going to say about Whitlock, just roster this guy. You'll be hearing a little bit more about him from John later, what those matchups entail, and a little hint on the streamer recommendations. But man, he looks good. I definitely would grab him if you can. And obviously, it's not set in stone. He could be bad, but the schedule looks great. His stuff looks great, and that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed that I didn't actually put Whitlock as a streamer last week because, yeah, the matchup was great for him. And the Red Sox are more than happy to stretch him out. Obviously, you know, the biggest thing with Whitlock for the longest time was, is he a reliever? Is he a starter? And the Red Sox are like, no, he's going to be a starter this year. And I think that's paid off dividends. Yeah, he looked really good last night. I was watching the start because I had him on my fantasy team. And yeah, he looked really good. He gave up a few big, you know, fly balls that kind of got a little dangerous out there, but a few bloop singles here and there, you know, against the Rockies, though, so never really did any damage. But yeah, his next two starts are kind of nice. So definitely, you know, hold on for that little announcement later in the episode. Speaking of just grid pitchers, I love that Michael Wacha is, like, dealing. It's just so funny because I kind of had him pegged as, like, a guy who – kind of a sneaky, you know, end of the rotation guy for your fantasy teams because the Padres had you know, we're kind of looking for a guy and they're like, oh, we'll take Michael Wacha. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, Nick Martinez is going to be the starter. Seth Lugo is going to be the starter. And lo and behold, Michael Wacha is the guy who's held down that position for them. And I remember saying, like, hey, the Yankees really should have signed Wacha. And, you know, they're having their own starter issues too with, you know, Severino finally coming back, but also Rodon still being unable to pitch. And yeah, for me, Michael Wacha was, like, probably one of the better under the radar signings of this offseason. And he is, yeah, still dealing for some reason.
Out of all the pitchers on the Padres, Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, all these guys, Seth Lugo, Nick Martinez, Michael Wacha has been their best starter. So pretty crazy to think that he's been their ace almost. You know, wouldn't pin him as that, but yeah, he's been great. He's been definitely someone that you can rely on as of late, and he just keeps dealing, man. You just can't stop the Wacha train.
Yeah, it'll keep chewing until it runs out of gas. But yeah,
it's Pac-Man over there. Wacha, 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 Wacha.
yeah, exactly.
Just mowing down and chewing down offenses.
Yeah. Well, on that note, moving on to Thursday. With the hitters, we're going to start with Adley Rutschman of the Orioles. He went 3-for-5 with a run, a homer, and an RBI. That one homer was launched 103.6 miles an hour off Rutschman's bat to left field, where Baltimore infamously moved the walls back, eventually with a 394-foot shot. I think someone called it, like, Baltimore, which I thought was hilarious.
Yep, I've heard that.
Yeah, so I think that's super funny. But yeah, Rutschman's clearly got... He still has power. Compared to other stats, though, his counting stats have been a little bit lacking. But his main calling card is basically his average and his OBP. He's still kind of young. He's only 25. The power is probably still developing. You know, I think most people say that it doesn't really get to, you know, your full capacity until you're like 27, 28. But, you know, I don't know. That's just maybe what baseball nerds say. He is about league average in terms of hard contact rate. So it's not like a fluke here where, you know, he's like, oh, he can hit the ball hard. It's just not going. No, he doesn't really hit the ball hard that much. But the thing is, the walk rate is still elite. And as long as he continues to get on base, good things will generally follow. And then, as we mentioned earlier, Bryson Stott of the Phillies, he went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, a homer, and an RBI on Thursday. He's kind of an under the radar guy, and like we said, he's on a team full of power hitters: Schwarber, Castellanos, Harper. But the Phillies' second baseman has 10 steals along with a .300 average. Again, he's not wowing anyone in the power department, despite the 418-foot homer that he hit today in the second. But he's been a very solid contributor in multiple categories. He's currently rostered in 67% of Yahoo League, so it's unlikely that he's available in your league. But if he is and you need help at the middle infield spot, maybe go check Bryson Stott out.
Stott has been really reliable for middle infield, and he's been someone that you just grabbed because he had a hot streak, and he really hasn't stopped. He just keeps producing, and we weren't really expecting it from Stott, but he's kind of cemented himself in this lineup and looks extremely, extremely good. He's been batting 5th and 6th constantly for this team, which, like we said, we went through that whole lineup. I mean, Schwarber, Turner, Harper, Castellanos, Realmuto, and then Stott. He's just performing. I mean, he's got 6 homers, 10 stolen bases, 26 RBI, and a near .300 average. I mean, what more could you really ask for from Bryson Stott? So he's been a great pickup. He's got second base and shortstop eligibility. Should be able to plug some holes for you if he's available on your wire. And then Adley Rutschman, yeah, I struggle with Rutschman because he's so good in OBP leagues. He's got a decent average, and he does have power, but it really comes in bunches. I'm not really sold on him being a top 3 catcher yet. I still think, I mean, as long as Varshow qualifies, I still put Realmuto, Varshow, and Will Smith ahead of Rutschman. Francisco Alvarez is now in the discussion as well, so maybe he's a top 5 catcher. I like Rutschman a lot, but as long as he keeps continuing to get on base, like you said, good things are going to happen because the Orioles lineup has been fantastic. So Rutschman's in the middle of an exciting Orioles team. He looks good. He's got so many years of being great ahead of him. So Rutschman is definitely an exciting player.
All right, moving on to pitchers then. We have Taj Bradley, who, let's be honest, it was a start. I don't really know. 4.1 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, but 11 strikeouts. Honestly, was kind of excited to talk about this because of those 11 strikeouts, because he was doing work in the first 2 or 3 innings, as some people would say. But ultimately, it was a little disappointing that he was pulled in the 5th and couldn't get the win here. He did get to 88 pitches, so it's not exactly the Rays being the Rays. It's just Bradley not being able to go 5 innings. He's come down to earth a little bit after a couple of duds, which were granted against the Blue Jays and the Rangers, so tough competition there. But it's good to see that the Rays are at least willing to let him pitch into games longer. As long as he can maintain a reasonable whip, that strikeout ability is going to help him for a long time. We just want him to go 5 innings if he can. And then Tyler Wells of the Orioles went 6.2 innings with 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts, including a win against the Toronto Blue Jays. I was a little worried when the Orioles actually sent Wells back into the game in the 7th, but he handled Matt Chapman and Kevin Kiermaier easily before Yennier Cano relieved him. Despite giving up 2 solo homers early in the game, Wells had a pretty solid evening with his 2 fastballs. The cutter and the 4-seamer earned a combined 10 whiffs and 10 called strikes, and the secondaries were pretty decent as well. Of course, now he gets to face the Tampa Bay Rays, but that's life in the AL East.
So, Taj Bradley, I'm so torn on what to do with him. I love his stuff. I think he looks great. He looks really confident on the mound as well. I mean, I don't know if you watched this start completely, but I was watching the entire thing, and this came against the Athletics, of course, which isn't the greatest team, although they've been very hot as of recent. But
true, yeah.
Bradley had 6 strikeouts after 2 innings. He struck out every batter. He had 9 strikeouts after 3 innings, so he struck out the side 3 times, and that's just incredible. And he only had 48 pitches with 9 strikeouts after 3. And then all of a sudden, he starts like nibbling around the corners to the 8 and 9 batters and, you know, walking a few and then giving up a hit. It was just so disappointing. And the inning where he started giving up runs, he actually just had really bad defense behind him. Isaac Paredes botched a play, which could have been an inning-ending double play. Instead, it ended up being bases loaded, so that stunk. And then in the outfield, Manuel Margot got a horrible jump in a ball at center and dove for it and kind of like trapped it and didn't catch it. So I just am so torn with Bradley. In quality start leagues, he's maddening. But what he reminds me of is last year's Christian Javier and Spencer Strider. Now, I'm not saying his stuff is as elite as those guys, but Tosh Bradley's fastball is definitely elite, and his other pitches are pretty good too. But I dropped Strider and Javier last season after picking them up for a while because they never went six innings. And I thought, hey, they're never going to go six innings. They're going to monitor their pitches, and it's going to be maddening. And I feel the same way about Bradley right now. So I don't really want to drop him in any of my leagues because I see the potential. I mean, 11 strikeouts, even though it was against the A's, 11 Ks, 9 of 9 on strikeouts to start the game. That is just remarkable, and that's upside you can't really find elsewhere on the wire. So I'm inclined to just hold on to him. Obviously, the Rays are never going to be pushing him and letting him go 6-7 innings often. But I think regardless, he's going to give you good ratios and great strikeouts. Hopefully, they'll start letting him go 6 and warming up to that, and he'll be able to get those quality starts. But he pitches for the Rays, so he'll get you wins. He's got great strikeout upside. I just see so many good things with Bradley, but man, is it frustrating, especially in a quality start league. I just don't know what to do. I'm like rattled in my brain here because of Bradley. And then Tyler Wells has been fantastic this season. He's had a 3.24 ERA, a 0.85 whip, a strikeout per inning pretty much, 74 Ks in 75 innings pitch. After this one, he actually has more Ks than innings pitch by one. And his last two starts against the Royals and the Blue Jays were the exact same lines. 6.2 innings pitched, 2.70 ERA, 0.90 whip. He just had four more strikeouts against the Blue Jays. So Tyler Wells has been having a fantastic season. And if you picked him up off the wire, I'm sure you are happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I did. I'm pretty excited about the fact that he was able to do this against the Blue Jays. But kind of to add to your point on Tosh Bradley, like, honestly, it feels like he's his worst enemy here when it comes to getting to six innings. Like, the Rays are letting him go, you know, 80-ish pitches. That should be enough for a guy of his caliber to get to six innings. Obviously, you'd love to see them let him go to 100 pitches, but it's the Rays. I mean, they're going to, you know, not do that. But yeah, I just wish that he was maybe a little bit more effective with those pitches, and you don't love those three walks, even though it's less than a walk per inning. It's just, you know, for a guy of his caliber, he should be able to walk less.
Yeah. And those walks really came in the latter part of his start, where he kind of didn't run out of gas or energy because he was still striking out people and his stuff looked great, but
right.
Two batters, he walked on four pitches. So There's got to be something. I mean, he was getting squeezed a little bit by the umpire. If you look at the charts and stuff, there were some borderline calls that didn't go his way. Maybe some of those four-pitch walks could have ended up being a strike in his favor. But, Yeah, I think he just has to settle down later in the game and really hone in on that command later on. Because if he loses that command, that's when he starts walking people and getting into trouble. Then blue pits happen and bad defense behind him. Like, that's when it all starts to crumble. So, yeah, you're right. He is his own worst enemy. And if he could just iron out that command later on, I think he could be so good.
Yeah, he's clearly one of the most talented rookie pitchers in this league right now. So if he can clean that up, like, he'll be pretty dominant for years to come.
I completely agree. And speaking of dominant pitchers, let's get into the streamers for next week. John, who do you have for us this time?
Yeah, well, I already spoiled it a little bit, but Garrett Whitlock of Boston, he's currently 35% roster in Yahoo, 13% roster on ESPN, so he should be available in your leagues. He just came off that start against the Rockies, and now gets rewarded with two more poor offenses in a beautiful two-start week. He gets the Twins and then the White Sox to round out the week. And while both offenses do have some pop in them, it could tear off 5-plus runs any day, right? You've got Carlos Correa, you've got Buxton on the Twins, Alex Kirilloff and Royce Lewis. But then on the White Sox, you know, you've also got Luis Robert Jr., who's very capable of tearing the cover off the ball. But the thing is, all those teams are inconsistent, and that makes Whitlock a very good stream in a weekly league if you are in that sort of situation. Second guy is Louis Varland of Minnesota. He's 21% roster on Yahoo, 9% on ESPN. You might want to keep track of this one because this start also could end up being Kenta Maeda, depending on how he's feeling if the Twins take him off injured list and send Varland back to AAA. But if Varland does start, he's been a pretty solid streamer. He's had a couple blowups. One of them was against Tampa, and the other one was against Toronto. And that specific one against Toronto wasn't completely his fault because the defense wasn't that great behind him. He gets a pretty soft matchup in Detroit, though. And while the stuff isn't overpowering, it's definitely good enough to handle a team like the Tigers. And then finally, this one's more kind of a joke one, but I thought I'd put it in. Yonny Chirinos of the Rays. He's currently 2% rostered on Yahoo, 1% rostered on ESPN. I don't know what the Rays are trying to do with Chirinos. Just classic Rays being Rays, I guess. They let him start against the Twins, and then they had him as the main pitcher against Oakland, although Jalen Beeks was the opener there, so he ended up only pitching like 3.1 innings. In both games, he was limited, even though the Rays let him go up to 80 pitches before he got injured. So he got injured, and then they brought him back, and now he's at like kind of like 60 pitches. Honestly, I don't even know why I'm suggesting him as a streaming option, but if there's one team where Chirinos could probably get five innings and qualify for a win, despite being on a limited pitch count, it's the Kansas City Royals. Chirinos doesn't have great stuff. He doesn't have great strikeout numbers at all, but he's only walked one batter in his last two games and given up only one earned run, and that's why he's being recommended.
So I like this list a lot. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Garrett Whitlock, who, like I mentioned before, just roster him. Pick him up for this start. Keep him on your team. He's got that beautiful two-start week coming up, and then I don't know what the rest of his schedule looks like, but I like his stuff, and I think it plays against any team. We've already seen him do well against good teams like the Yankees, so I think Whitlock is someone you should just roster. Louis Varland has some excellent stuff. We really don't know what's going to happen with his fate in the lineup once Maeda comes back, but I really like this stream against the Tigers. Anybody against the Tigers, I'm a big fan of. And then Yonny Chirinos, yeah, very interesting suggestion here. Obviously, this is something that if you need innings and good peripherals in a deeper league, that's who you stream. I mean, I like anybody against the Royals, so Yonny Chirinos, why not? If I had to rank them, once again, probably in that order. Whitlock, then Varland, and then Chirinos. So, yeah, these are all good options. Once again, I think Whitlock should just be rostered. I think Varland should just be rostered as well. But, once again, we don't know his fate with Kenta Maeda returning, hopefully soon. So those are the pitcher recommendations for streaming. And then for my hitting recommendation, I have one suggested name, and that's Nick Prado of the Royals. He's currently 10% rostered on Yahoo. And with Pasquantino getting injured, Prado has been getting everyday playing time. He's been batting leadoff for the team and having pretty decent results. The StatCast metrics don't look too promising, but he's only 24 years old and has always had a lot of potential. The main reason why I like him for next week is, first of all, because the Royals play seven games, so if you want a bat that's going to play every day, he's your guy. Second of all, four of those games come against the Tigers on the road. Over the last 15 days, the Tigers are 26th in staff ERA with a gross 5.18 ERA. Their next three games after that are against the Rays, who have been second best in staff ERA in the same time frame. But if you're in a deeper league or need a bat that can give you some counting stats for the week, give a look to Prado. So I think he can help you in those deeper leagues, or if you just want a possibly hot bat for a week. I don't think he's anything super huge, but I can see him tearing up the Tigers pretty well.
Yeah, the problem with Prado is that he is a three true outcomes hitter with no power. So
yeah,
he strikes out a lot. He walks a lot, which is great. But he hasn't really shown any power. Like you mentioned, the StatCast metrics just aren't that great. But he does have a good bat in terms of contact, right? 278 average, 362 OBP. If you look at expected stats on Pitcherless, he has a 262 expected average, which is pretty close to his actual average, and a 352 expected WOBA, which isn't exactly OBP, but it does correspond a lot. His bat is real in terms of getting contact, and he does a really good job of getting walks. So especially in OBP leagues, If you need help there at first base, I think Prado only has outfield eligibility. He might have first base eligibility as well, depending on where you play fantasy. But I actually think that's not a bad pickup, because he is going to kind of be the everyday guy for them. As far as I know, they don't really have a lot of other solid first basemen in Kansas City.
Prado has batted leadoff in 12 of his last 13 games. Once he batted seventh, so I think he's pretty solidified as their leadoff hitter at the moment. He does have first base and outfield eligibility on Yahoo, so a little bit of versatility there. And he's hit four home runs in 43 games, so he doesn't have a lot of pop, but he's got some pop. So I think that against the Tigers at Detroit, which is a better hitter park than Kauffman, which I think they're kind of parallel, but Detroit's a little bit better. And then against the Rays, he faces Yonny Chirinos. I think he avoids Shane McClanahan. If he does, then that's even better. So just as a nice play if you need a hot bat for maybe an injury plug-in or just someone to ride out for the week, I think Nick Prado's not a bad shout. But that's all for this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you go, please follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnCuh. That's THEJOHNKE. And myself on Twitter at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.